Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today I will summarize and review the book, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. Text revision DSM-5-TR by the American Psychiatric Association is a professional reference work, not a narrative or self-help book. Published as the text revision to DSM-5, it is designed to classify mental disorders and provide standardized diagnostic criteria for clinical, research, administrative, and educational use. Its purpose is to give psychiatrists, psychologists, counselors, social workers, trainees, researchers, insurers, and health systems a shared framework for identifying and communicating mental health diagnoses. The volume updates descriptive text, diagnostic coding information, references, and selected criteria in light of developments since DSM-5. It is especially important because DSM terminology shapes clinical records, insurance claims, epidemiological studies, training programs, and interdisciplinary communication in the United States and beyond. Although it does not provide a full theory of mental illness or a treatment manual, DSM-5-TR remains one of the central tools for organizing psychiatric knowledge in contemporary practice. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, standardized diagnostic criteria is a common clinical language. A central function of DSM-5-TR is to create a shared vocabulary for describing mental disorders. Instead of leaving diagnosis to loose impressions, the manual defines disorders through specified criteria, including symptom patterns, duration thresholds, impairment requirements, exclusions, and associated features. This standardization matters because mental health care often involves many professionals across different settings. A psychiatrist in an inpatient unit, a psychologist in private practice, a school clinician, and a researcher all need terms that can be understood consistently. DSM-5-TR does not eliminate clinical judgment, but it structures that judgment by making the reasoning behind a diagnosis more explicit. Its categories also help distinguish ordinary distress from clinically significant syndromes by connecting symptoms to functional impairment or distress. The benefit is practical reliability. Clinicians can document why a diagnosis was given, researchers can define study populations more consistently, and institutions can communicate diagnoses across records and systems. The limitation is that standardization can sometimes make complex lived experience appear more rigid than it is. Even so, the manual provides an essential baseline for organized diagnostic communication. Secondly, text revision updates reflecting newer research and coding practice. DSM-5-TR is not a completely new addition in the way DSM-5 was, but its revisions are clinically significant. The text revision updates explanatory material, references, coding guidance, and selected diagnostic criteria based on literature and professional review since DSM-5. One of its most visible additions is prolonged grief disorder, which recognizes a persistent, impairing grief response that extends beyond expected bereavement processes. The manual also includes updated ICD-10-CM codes and coding notes, which are important because diagnostic labels must connect to health records, billing systems, public health reporting, and administrative documentation. Another notable feature is the inclusion of codes for suicidal behavior and non-suicidal self-injury that can be recorded without requiring another mental disorder diagnosis. This is clinically relevant because suicide risk and self-injury may need documentation, monitoring, and care planning even when a full psychiatric diagnosis is absent or still under assessment. These changes show how DSM-5-TR functions as both a scientific reference and an operational document. Its value lies in keeping diagnostic language aligned with evolving clinical knowledge and health system requirements. Thirdly, diagnosis as structured assessment rather than checklist matching. Although DSM-5-TR is often associated with lists of symptoms, its proper use requires more than counting criteria. The manual repeatedly depends on clinical interpretation, differential diagnosis, context, developmental stage, duration, severity, and the exclusion of medical or substance-related causes when relevant. Many symptoms occur across multiple disorders, such as sleep disturbance, concentration problems, irritability, anxiety, or mood change. The clinician must decide whether the overall pattern best fits a depressive disorder, anxiety disorder, trauma-related disorder, neurodevelopmental condition, substance-related condition, medical condition, or another category. DSM-5-TR supports this process through diagnostic features, associated features, specifiers, severity indicators, and contextual information. These elements help refine the diagnosis rather than treating the category as a simple label. The manual also acknowledges the importance of cultural and social context because behavior that appears unusual in one setting may be understandable or normative in another. In practical terms, DSM-5-TR is most useful when paired with a careful clinical interview, collateral information when appropriate, risk assessment, and longitudinal observation. Its criteria organize evidence, but they do not replace professional reasoning. Fourthly, administrative research and policy influence beyond the clinic, DSM-5TR has influence well beyond the private encounter between clinician and patient. Diagnostic categories affect insurance authorization, disability documentation, service eligibility, institutional reporting, forensic evaluation, pharmaceutical research, and public health statistics. Researchers rely on standardized criteria to decide who belongs in a study population, which allows findings to be compared across sites and over time. Health systems use DSM diagnoses in records and care pathways, while insurers often require formal diagnoses before covering services. Policymakers and agencies may also use diagnostic prevalence data to plan mental health programs, allocate resources, and define areas of need. This broader role explains why precision in terminology and coding is so important. A diagnostic manual is not merely descriptive. It helps determine how mental health problems are counted, funded, regulated, and treated within institutions. That influence is useful because it creates consistency, but it also raises stakes. Changes to categories or criteria can affect access to care, research priorities, and public understanding. DSM-5TR, therefore, operates as a bridge between clinical knowledge and the systems that organize mental health care. Lastly, known limitations of a symptom-based classification system, DSM-5TR is authoritative, but it is not a complete explanation of mental illness. Its categories are primarily descriptive and symptom-based, which means they usually do not identify a single biological cause, psychological mechanism, or social origin for a condition. This is partly because many mental disorders have complex and overlapping causes that remain scientifically unsettled. The symptom-based approach improves practical diagnosis, but it also creates challenges. Different disorders may share features, and individuals often meet criteria for more than one diagnosis. Cultural differences can also complicate interpretation, since distress, behavior, family expectations, spiritual beliefs, and communication styles vary across communities. Another criticism is that diagnostic expansion can risk medicalizing forms of suffering that may be related to grief, stress, social adversity, or ordinary variation. DSM-5TR does not provide full treatment protocols, so a diagnosis must be followed by evidence-based care planning, patient preference, risk assessment, and contextual formulation. These limitations do not make the manual unusable. They clarify its proper role. It is a diagnostic classification tool that supports clinical reasoning, not a final account of what a person is experiencing or why. In conclusion, DSM-5TR should be read and used by mental health professionals, graduate students in clinical fields, psychiatric researchers, medical trainees, health administrators, and professionals whose work requires accurate understanding of psychiatric diagnosis. It is not intended as a casual self-diagnosis guide, and lay readers may find it technical without clinical training. Its practical benefit is that it offers a structured method for identifying disorders, documenting diagnostic reasoning, aligning diagnoses with ICD-10-CM codes, and communicating across professional systems. Its intellectual benefit is that it shows how contemporary psychiatry organizes mental distress into categories that can be studied, recorded, debated, and revised, compared with general psychiatry textbooks. DSM-5TR stands out because it is the official classification reference produced by the American Psychiatric Association, rather than a broad explanatory overview. Compared with treatment manuals, it focuses on diagnosis rather than psychotherapy techniques or medication guidance. Compared with informal mental health guides, it uses precise criteria and professional terminology. Its distinct value lies in combining clinical criteria, descriptive text, coding utility, and institutional authority in one reference. The book is most useful when treated as a disciplined framework for assessment, while recognizing that humane clinical care still requires context, judgment, and individualized formulation. If you would like to support American Psychiatric Association, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.